2001 Sunstone Salt Lake Symposium, Session 273, Ancient America in Book of Mormon Times. Participants, Terry J. O'Brien, William May, and Dennis Purvis.
Welcome to Session 273, Ancient America in Book of Mormon Times. My name is Dwayne Jennings. I'm the chair for this session. I am asked to remind everyone that admission to sessions is by name tag or ticket only. And at the end, there should be some time for questions and answers. And this session should be recorded. So you can buy the ticket or the tape afterwards out in the lobby. Let me quickly do the bios on our speakers. No? Need to speak louder, okay? Terry O'Brien will be sharing a series of slides. He is a professor emeritus from Cypress College in California, where he taught pre-Columbian art for 30-plus years. He has a MA from BYU, was an NEH scholar, served an LDS mission to Guatemala, has been in a bishopric, a seminary, and an institute teacher, and was vice president of culture at BYU when he was there. He's visited over 300 archaeological sites, is a member of the National Archaeological Association, and is author of this book that's on for sale out in the lobby, Fair Gods and the Feathered Serpents, and Feathered Serpents. Wayne May is not able to be here today, unfortunately, so we won't get to hear from him. Dennis Purvis comes from pioneer ancestry and was born in Cowley, Wyoming, but has lived most of her life in California, where she was educated. She attended Fullerton Junior College in Fullerton, California, and Cabot College in Hayward, California. She is married to Lieutenant Colonel Alfred Purvis, who is retired, and they have 4 sons and 20 grandchildren and 11 great-grandchildren. Venice and her husband have served missions in Dallas, Texas, and San Diego, and she has written a number of articles for the Church News. Is on the Mount Timpanogos Temple History Committee, and was instrumental in writing the booklet or the pamphlet for the temple down there. And then she is the author of Book and the Map, which unfortunately is out of print, and she will follow Terry's presentation. Thank you.
I want to be sure you hear me. You know, I'm a school teacher, and it bugs me when people get up to speak and they speak to the first row. People in the back don't know what's going on. So my suggestion always is speak in the back row. Dwayne didn't mention, because I didn't tell him, that I've also visited the major rivers in the world. The Zambezi, the Irrawaddy, the Nile, all those rivers. Because I worked at Disneyland for 2 years on the Jungle Boat. And, of course, the Jungle Boat goes through all those rivers. You've all been there. Welcome aboard, the Zambezi, and yes, ladies and gentlemen. Before I go into the jungle with that and wave your friends, you've never seen anything. You know that? Yeah. I'm the guy who just happened to do that. And it was quite exciting. Then I started doing the real thing. When I was a boy, I read the Book of Mormon and was fascinated by it and wondered where it occurred. I always wondered where it might have happened. And so I went on a Guatemalan mission and with my friend Toby Pinger back there, and we got to see a lot of jungle and thought maybe it might have happened here. Also, I want to thank Brad, who came all the way from... Where'd you come from, Brad? Spring River, all the way almost over by Wyoming, huh? Used to be with us, and he's going to make sure the projectors work. So thank you, John, for bringing your son. So then I started going to all these ruins, and people accused me of ruining my life, which basically was true. I took my seminary and institute students down, and one time we went to 80 sites in 4 weeks. When we got to the last site, I had a van, and the guys were sleeping in the back of the mattress. I said, Oh, man, guys, you got to see this one. This is great. And I said, no. And I said, well, just pull the curtains and look at it. No. I said, what's wrong? We don't ever want to see another Dan Snyder as long as we live. 85. So I'm a little bit obsessed with this thing that Ron, and excuse my language, that's exactly how they said it, and I can see how they felt. So today we're going to, I hope you didn't expect me to tell you where the Book of Mormon occurred. That's where what some of you hope Dennis will tell you that. And I'm glad she's here, and I appreciate Al bringing her. And so basically what I'm going to show you is the areas where the Book of Mormon may have occurred. Central, South, and North America, and there are many theories about it. I'm going to look at these theories and kind of let you decide where it all happened, because I'm not going to tell you that. I know, but I'm not going to tell you, right? No, I refuse to reveal what God hasn't. That's kind of my policy, you know. I don't like to take that heavy responsibility. So rather than keep talking as I would do, we'll do it with slides. I'm sorry, we couldn't get the screens down to this level, so we tried to do it. We'll see if that works. Hopefully, once the lights are out, you won't notice too much anyway. So we'll hurry along. I'm reminded of the man who was always in a hurry. He went to the doctor. He wasn't feeling very well. And the doctor said, well, I have bad news for you. And he said, what's that? And he said, well, you only have 60 days to live. And the man said, well, doctor, I can't pay my bill in 60 days. So the doctor gave him 60 days more. Well, no one's going to give us 60 minutes more here, so we better get on with it. Does somebody know how to turn the light off? Way over on the right there, there's a series of little buttons. If you could push the bottom one, I think the lights will go out. And in fact, while they're going out, before they go out, hit the top button. Also, because we have to keep a time schedule, I'm going to give you about 45 minutes of slides. Then Venice is going to tell you where it all happened, and then we'll finish up with a few more slides. So we've got to be out of here at 6:15. Okay, now, thank you. I will assume most of you are Latter-day Saint or know something about it, so I'm going to rush through this part. When I do a fireside, I usually spend a lot of time on Joseph Smith and the Book of Mormon, but, we got one of those. There we go. No? Sometimes these don't want to work. Okay. You all know the Joseph Smith story, the Hill Cumorah, the finding of the plates. You know the story of the Book of Mormon. From 500, 600 B.C. to about A.D. 420. Most of the Book of Mormon occurs during that period of time. And, of course, then the period of the Jaredites, somewhere from 2000 to 3000 B.C. And this is not a history, as you know. The Book of Mormon is not a history. Everybody says it's a history of ancient America. That's like saying the Bible is a history of Europe and Asia. It's a history or a record of a certain people who live in a certain area, and we're going to try to find that. Now, let's hope this works. That one doesn't want to do it. Okay. I don't know. Something wrong here. Okay. There are many theories about where the Book of Mormon could have happened. Wayne May was going to come and talk about North America and the Palmyra area. He has a very fine presentation on that, and maybe he can do it for Sunstone sometime. Also, Central America, there are at least three or four or five theories about the Book of Mormon occurring in Central America. And then South America, and Dennis will tell us about that theory. I may have trouble with this one. It doesn't want to look forward. I guess you're going to have to push that center one. You figure out how to do that. I don't know why it's not working. Find the button. It's the one on the right. There's two buttons back there, and it's the one on the right. There you go. Go one more.
Okay. So I'm calling this Ancient America in Book of Mormon times because I'm only showing you what was going on in ancient times during the Book of Mormon periods. This is one of the great cities they have found, El Mirador in North Guatemala. They haven't unearthed it like this yet. This is a drawing of what they think it probably would look like if they could unearth it. Well, let's see if that'll go. The trouble is showing slides. You have to push that one down. That one's all right. We'll get it eventually. We haven't had a chance to try this yet. And so, usually they work fine. I don't know what's going on. Can you get it? Maybe I better get something. Kirk, maybe you could handle that side. And he could handle the other side when things go wrong. There you go. Whoop. We'll get it. Not everything that is in the Book of Mormon has been found yet, but amazingly, a lot of things that Joseph Smith didn't know about have been found in ancient America since that time, and of course, many things will be found yet. Not everything is in yet. Are we having trouble? Let's see if we can get that. Between them because they don't always line up, as you can see. Give a little, yeah. I would use a tripod down there, but they won't let me. They said, yeah, it'll be $300 for each site you go to, or $300 a day. Well, I went to about 80 sites, so obviously I'm not going to pay $300. And so that's why they're not always lined up. I have to kind of focus on something and then turn and shoot and turn and shoot again. But hopefully most of them will work all right. How many have been to Tulum? Several of you have. It's not a Book of Mormon site, sorry. Built about 1000 AD, maybe, 1200 AD. But that doesn't mean there aren't other sites underneath these. It may be back to Book of Mormon time. Is that center focus? I guess we'll have to move that one by hand each time. It doesn't want to do it. Worked fine before. I was very lucky to be in Mexico one time when the Spaniards were actually there. They were filming a movie about ancient times, and so they let me photograph them. Except then the Indians came after me because they wanted money for my having taken their picture, and so that was a bit of a problem. I guess you'll just have to do everyone. That one doesn't want to work. Cortez came here in 1519. He saw all this gold, and of course he marched into Tenochtitlan to try to get the gold. Here you see the city of Tenochtitlan, which is today Mexico City. On the right, a drawing I did to kind of illustrate what it might have looked like based on maps and charts that I had seen. But Cortez was so impressed with all of this when he heard the story of the white-bearded god. As most of you know, the Indians believed that in the distant past a white man had come to the Americas and that he had taught his gospel of peace, brought a great era of prosperity, and then he left saying he would someday return. And so Cortez heard this story, and this was the beginning of the story of Quetzalcoatl, the white-bearded god of ancient America. Well, the Spaniards were so impressed with what they saw that they destroyed it. In Peru, Pizarro destroyed what he found there. Marched in on the natives, took over their cities, stole all their gold, and within a short time, there was very little left of ancient America. Most of it went to the jungle or to the desert. And so for many years, it looked like the stories of ancient America were over, finished. Back as early as 1540, there wasn't much left to see. And so now we're going to look at America before Columbus came along and ruined everything and stopped the progress. And that's what the word pre-Columbian means, before Columbus. How did people get here? Well, today scientists, archaeologists will tell us that people crossed the Bering Straits there on the left as early as 20,000 years ago. I know some of you aren't sure about that. But we're finding evidence all the time that pushes the dates back farther and farther and farther. In the center, you can see that South America is not really very far from Europe. Columbus was able to sail that distance in a month. And so it's amazing that America wasn't discovered long before the time of Columbus. On the right, you see the main theories of ancient America, civilizations, Peru, Central America, and then up in North America. But Central America, Mexico, and Peru were the great centers of civilization before the time of Columbus. The earliest days that we have, the earliest civilizations that we have record of and have objects from, date back to 3000 BC. Now, we believe the Jaredites, a nation who left the Tower of Babel, came over here sometime between 3000 BC and 2000 BC. Who were they? Where did they land? Some people believe they landed along the coast of California or along the coast of Peru. We don't know for sure who they were. We do find this civilization along the coast of Peru, 3000 BC, but no big buildings, no writing, just little figurines that look a lot like Oriental figures from Jamon, Japan at the same time. The next great civilization in South America dates to about 1200 to 1400 BC, and that's the Chavín culture. They had beautiful buildings, amazing settings of rocks weighing many tons. They had beautiful pottery, statuary. So they were a very highly developed civilization. Again, they look a lot like the civilizations of Japan just shortly before this time, the Shang Dynasty. In South America, you have some very high mountains, of course. And in the Book of Mormon, they often say, we will go up, or they went up to such and such a city. And if they landed here, then they definitely went up. Joseph Smith was quoted as saying that they landed in Chile. However, there's quite a controversy on that, as you know. The writing was in the handwriting of Frederick G. Williams and was not even published in the time of Joseph Smith. So we don't know if he said it or someone said it for him. But if they started in Chile, we know they kept moving north. They had their land of inheritance first, where they stayed for some time, the family of Lehi I'm talking about now, who left Jerusalem around 500 B.C., 600 B.C., and they landed somewhere perhaps near Chile, and then after about 20 years, they started moving northward, and moved several times northward. There we find Lake Titicaca, Lake Titicaca, the highest navigable lake in the world. And over near it, on the shore of Lake Titicaca, are these ruins of Tiwanaku, very, very strange city. They claim this city was built on the ground level and then rose up later. This stone alone weighs many, many tons. It's the largest single carved stone in the world. And the whole city is a very strange city. They say there are five cities underneath it, and it dates back long, long before the time of Christ. Tiwanaku has been destroyed by Spaniards and tourists. There isn't a lot there left to see, but you see the mound in the back, which was a great temple, statues that look something like the statues of Easter Island, and it's very possible that those people came from this area. Also here at Tiwanaku, they had a legend of the white-bearded god. They say that many white civilizations were there and were destroyed by the natives. On the plains of Peru, we find these strange figures. What they have to do with the Book of Mormon, nobody knows. Maybe they don't. Not every civilization in ancient America is in the Book of Mormon, just like every civilization in Europe and Asia is not part of the House of Israel. I personally believe the Book of Mormon occurred in a very small area, maybe several hundred miles, square miles. We don't know exactly. But it certainly did not occur from South America clear up to Comora. That was too far, 10,000 miles to walk. That theory is no longer held by anyone that I know of. But here you see Maria Rijka I met down there, and these strange figures that are the size of two baseball fields, some of them, carved by the natives in yellow sand, and probably, she believes, are constellations to the gods. In Peru, we find magnificent buildings. Venice will talk about the one on the left, Pachacamac, which was a great center about the time of Christ, covered with gold when the Spaniards came, and now, of course, it's just a big ruin along the seashore, but it's near Lima. We find figurines with long beards. Natives were not supposed to have beards, and yet we find figurines with long beards. And on the right, they have actually found burials with blonde hair. Now, some people say it just was bleached out in the sun, but or maybe they had bottles of chemicals. We don't know. But there you find blonde mummies anyway. At Pachacamac also, we find buildings. These people were great builders. The Book of Mormon tells us that they had great cities. They built out of cement and wood here, adobe, but they would often plaster the adobe. So even today, these buildings still remain. These are a bit restored, of course. In Peru also, just recently, in the last 10 years, they have found in some of these great pyramids tombs with beautiful burials, many beautiful objects of gold and silver, and that's another requirement for the Book of Mormon. They must have had gold and silver and other metals to qualify as a Book of Mormon site. There you can see the Spaniards rerouted a river and washed away a lot of this mountain to find the gold in it, but recently they have found tombs that the Spaniards did not find. And in these tombs, you find beautiful featherwork, gold masks, figures painted on pottery. And I want you to notice on the left there a king being carried on a platform with a serpent head. And next to the king is Dog Spot. Can you find Dog Spot up there? He had a dog named Spot. Well, the reason I mention that is because just recently they have found the tomb of that king on that pottery. And over here you see the king buried here with his wife and his warriors, and his pottery, and Dog Spot. There he is. So they found Dog Spot. On the left, a drawing that someone has made showing the king, and Dog Spot is there in the picture. Other great cities in Peru, again, qualify as great cities, like the Book of Mormon said. Chan Chan is 10 square miles, 10 different king encampments. They're about a mile around, where the king lived with his family and grew their crops and raised their cattle. And beautiful carvings on their walls, and then probably plastered. This dates back, though, to about 1000 A.D., but it's probably reminiscent of earlier cities. And then, of course, the Spaniards discovered Cusco, the great heart of the Lima area, with the walls here fitted in perfectly. You can't even get a razor blade between the joints. Lots of gold here came out of Peru, and a great authoritarian kingship. These people worshiped the sun, and we see their sun god, the moon god with silver, the pan pipes that they played, which are found only in Greece outside of Peru. And then again, beautiful textiles. The Book of Mormon talks about these people having beautiful textiles. And one of my favorite ruins I just have to show you. Even though it doesn't date back to Book of Mormon times, it's a great place to go, Machu Picchu. How many have been there? Ah, quite a few of you. We've got some travelers here. Okay. A wonderful site found in 1911 by Hiram Bingham. Of course, maybe you, like I, had to climb that big mountain in the back, Huayan Picchu. A magnificent view from up there. And then those wonderful Kurilams and Kurmams that they talk about in the Book of Mormon, probably Yamas, huh? We don't know what else they were. Alpacas, llamas, alpacas, vicuñas. Yeah. Anyway, it's just a wonderful site, about 8,000 feet high. You go up to Cusco, and then you come down to Machu Picchu. The Olmec, now we're moving from South America. I don't have a lot on South America. I've only been there 3 times. And so I'm missing a lot of slides from there. But in Central America, we find the Olmecs. 1200 BC, this marvelous civilization that wasn't discovered by modern-day civilization until about 1880. They had no idea who these people were. And finally, they were able to carbon date some of the bodies, and they dated back to 1200 BC. So some people like to think these are probably remnants of the Jaredite times. I don't know if that's true. It's just that when a Mormon archaeologist is looking for Jaredites, and they only find one civilization that dates back to 1200 BC, then they brand these Jaredites. Others say, no, this is a remnant of the Nephi and Lehi, but these people go back to 1200 BC. Jaredites go back to 2000 to 3000 BC. So I'll leave it up to you. But this is one of the great civilizations in Book of Mormon times. I was looking for the temple here. I was told there was a 100-foot temple, and I couldn't find it, so I walked to the top of that mountain to see it. Couldn't find it, and suddenly it dawned on me, I'm standing on it. These people look very oriental. And they do some marvelous artwork. Look at the twisted torso on the far left there. They weren't doing that in Europe until about Renaissance times, did they use this twisted contrapposto position. On the right, you see little figurines carved out of jade, some kind of a conclave. And they brought their big stones down the river because this site, La Venta, is right on an island. And they carved these huge heads, big stone heads. We don't know just what they are. They look like the surly football players or maybe motorcyclists who haven't had the motorcycle invented yet, but they're wearing helmets for when it happens. They don't look like happy people. I don't think I would want to know these people. No wonder the Nephites were always fighting their neighbors, huh? But a few years later, in the same area, we find that these people had ceased to exist about 400 BC, about the time the Jaredites disappear. And we find another people taking over this area, and they're quite a relief from the Olmecs. These are the people of Veracruz. I think the Olmecs, I've been there, and the mosquitoes are so terrible there, I had a face like the Olmecs, too, from all the scratching and itching. These people must have discovered off, and you can see they're much happier now. This is Veracruz. Another very important site in Oaxaca. How many have been to Oaxaca? Quite a few. We got some travelers. Okay. Oaxaca, Mexico. This site was built about the time the Greeks were leveling the Parthenon. And so this definitely dates in the time of Lehi and Nephi. But if they came to South America, we can't explain how they got clear up here so quickly and started building. So here we see pyramids. We see stairways, 12 columns there on top of one of those buildings. And lots of burials. One burial is in the shape of a cross. So a Mormon mind could go quite a ways with that particular feature. And bearded figures in the center. You see a lot of bearded faces again in Oaxaca, Mexico. They also had a legend of a white-bearded god who visited them in ancient times. Now, in Central America, we look at the Maya. This is where Toby and I served our mission. Anybody else been to Guatemala? Several have, okay. And Kirk. Kirk back there. Thanks for helping out, Kirk. He also went to Mexico with me. And the Maya, as far as we know now, date back to 2300 B.C. And so in Sorensen's books and others, they assume these are the Jaredites. And we do see the ruins on the right here where their buildings go back that far. Many of them are just humble, simple people living in little shacks. And if you can see it there on the far left, there's Dodd's spot again. This guy gets around. Down at the bottom left there. Well, what we have just seen would be Book of Mormon times from Coriantumr and the Jaredite, brother of Jared, and Jared, King Mosiah. We would think of Lehi and Nephi, all the things that they did, the River Sidon, the wars that they had, some of the great kings like King Noah, the wicked King Noah. All of that would have occurred in ancient America during the period we have just seen. Now we're getting into 300 BC to AD 250. 62% of the Book of Mormon occurs between about 130 B.C. to 30 A.D. So most of the Book of Mormon occurs in the period we're looking at now. Teotihuacan is one of the great cities of ancient America, near Mexico City, and not mentioned in the Book of Mormon as far as we know. It was a great city. It contributed to the Maya civilizations. We see their architecture and their little figurines all over the country. So they had a great influence on the other areas. On the left, you see many of the sites of Yucatan. And, of course, Book of Mormon tours will take you up there to those sites. Not all of them are Book of Mormon times, but many of them have had cities underneath them that may date to Book of Mormon times. Here on the right, we see El Mirador, which we saw at the beginning, that beautiful city. You see what it looks like now. Basically, it's jungle covered up. How does a city get covered up? Well, over the years, as people leave, birds drop seeds. The seeds grow, and it doesn't take long in a jungle for seeds to get 180 feet high and totally cover up a whole ruin that might be 180 feet high itself. So jungle cities can be lost. And here again, without the writing, you see El Mirador, a good idea of the great cities of ancient Guatemala. And this is one reason so many people believe the events of the Book of Mormon occurred in Guatemala, because of the dramatic ruins there. They're just spectacular. The Book of Mormon tells us they had great cities. They covered the whole land, Mormon says, when he traveled with his father. And the whole land was covered with cities. Well, what is the whole land? He probably didn't go from Tierra del Fuego up to the Bering Straits. The whole land that he saw was covered with great city, and we don't know how big that land would have been. But they built of cement, they built of wood, and plaster. The problem was, in order to get their cement and plaster, they had to cut down forests to burn the fires, to break down the lime deposits into cement and into plaster. And so here you see very few trees. And we do read in the Book of Mormon that at one point they had to build a cement and a block so that they waited for their trees to grow so they could have more trees. So they must have used a lot of trees. This site, Tikal, how many have been there? Quite a few have been to Tikal. So many tourists are going now that they're afraid they're going to wear down these ruins, so they keep opening new areas. That's the best way they can preserve these sites, is to open new areas and spread the tourists out. So here you see temples reminding us of the temples of Ramayumpton, where they would go to the top and only a couple of people could stand there and praise themselves and say how grateful they were that they were better than everybody else, etc. How are you holding up back there, Brad? Brad's hitting the center screen for us all the time. This just doesn't want to work. Outside of Mexico City, we find a round pyramid, Cuicuilco, dating back to about 200 B.C., definitely Book of Mormon times. Van Daniken wrote a book, Chariots of the Gods, in which he said this was a UFO that came from outer space. I don't know how well a UFO flies. It's made of river stones, but that's their problem. The round pyramid was followed by the stepped pyramid. And the fact that they had pyramids here doesn't especially mean they came from Egypt. In Egypt, they built pyramids for burying their dead. They could have done the same thing here just as easily without asking the Egyptians how to do it. In fact, Egyptian pyramids are smooth-sided, and these are stepped-sided. Here we find beautiful monuments, carvings of statues, and I'm going to move along. I don't know how much time we've got, but one of the largest pyramids in the world is that outside of Cholula, Mexico, 1,200 feet wide and about 250 feet high. Bigger in volume than the pyramids of Egypt. So the largest pyramids of the world are actually found here in ancient America. I imagine there's a whole city underneath this land here. They just haven't unearthed it yet. Here's a comparative view of the biggest pyramid in Egypt compared to the biggest pyramid in Mexico, and a little drawing showing some of the other pyramids that we're looking at in comparison. The greatest story in the Book of Mormon, and the purpose for the Book of Mormon, of course, is to tell the story of the arrival of Jesus Christ to the American continent. All through the Book of Mormon, we hear of Christ coming, and then later of his having come, and his message, and the faith that these people had in the coming Lord. Well, in the Aztec records, we have drawings that depict this white-bearded God on a cross, on the left carrying his cross, on the right being crucified. People have said, but he's tied and Christ was nailed. Well, these people didn't have all the facts. They were not in Jerusalem. They didn't have all the details. And they didn't have a New Testament there to fill them in. But the Book of Mormon tells us that Christ did come to America. And the legends of the white god of ancient America are rampant. Duane showed you the book that I wrote on the white god of ancient America. I've been pursuing this for about 25 years and finally put it all into a book so I could get it off my mind. And in there I've got story after story of the white god who came to the Americas and show pictures depicting this white god among all the cultures. We also see bearded figures among the native cultures. And in the center, I was at Palenque when this man came out of the jungle. He's a Lacandon Indian. They claim they have never intermarried with any European tribe civilizations. And he's blonde and has blue eyes. He didn't want me to take his picture, so I had to do it and then quickly look the other way. After Christ came to America, we know for about 200 years, at least in the area of the Book of Mormon, these people were righteous. They lived in peace and harmony, which is very rare in the Book of Mormon. Those of you who have read it know that times of peace only last about 2 years. But here they had 200 years of peace and prosperity. And then, again, pride and falling and sinning and departing from their standards. Here we read now about great civilizations. Cities were built. There were kings, priests who wore great robes, luxurious jewelry. People became very prideful. Teotihuacan was still in existence at this time, up to about 700 A.D. This city was still going strong. When the Book of Mormon says the continents and the civilizations were destroyed, it's only talking about certain areas. They were not all destroyed. And there's no evidence that Teotihuacan was ever destroyed during these periods of time. Here's another of my favorite sites, Copan over in Honduras, dating back to about maybe 200 and 300 A.D., and then what we see here dating up to about 600 A.D. Eventually, as you know, the Mayas left these cities around 800 A.D. They just walked out of them. That doesn't mean that was the end of the Mayas. They just went back to farming the villages. Many theories about why they left their cities. One was too many chiefs and not enough Indians. Too many taxes. Too many people throwing their weight around, and the peasants got tired of it. But there are many other theories about this too, economic ones especially. Copan's a beautiful site in Honduras. We see a staircase here on the right with hieroglyphs that would explain the history of this city, but an earthquake did destroy this and knocked all the stones down. They have since reconstructed it. Here you see monuments to the kings and queens, the elaborate costumes that they must have worn, now carved in stone, and sacrificial victims were often the jaguar. The pelt was worn by the main priest or the king. And we know that in the Book of Mormon it says they reverted to sacrifice again and to bloody sacrifice, even started wearing loincloths and reverted back to a very primitive stage. Again, Tikal goes up to about 600 A.D. And so definitely Book of Mormon times started around 600 B.C. up to 600 A.D. We see what a great city it was on the left. That's a model. On the right, you see the ruins as they are, and in the center, a reconstruction. On the right, again, as when I was in my mission, they wanted some of us to go to Tikal and help with the work and translate, but I was anxious to get home after 2.5 years. In the center, you see what it looked like when I was first there in the 50s. On the right, how it looks today, and on the left, probably how it looked when the Mayas finished it. Oftentimes, you'll go to a ruin, and it's covered with jungle, as you see on the left. You go back 2 years later, and it looks like that's one on the right. Is that in focus, Kurt? Could you focus that? So when I went back 2 years later, they had just, you know where to focus it? On top? Oh, no, on top. There's a little knob on top. See the little knob on top? Or on the side, there's a little knob. There you go. Thank you. Got it. Okay. Uxmal, another wonderful site, south of Mérida in Yucatan, dates back, as far as we know, to 700 A.D., but may date earlier because there are two pyramids underneath this pyramid on the right, the Pyramid of the Dwarf. A wonderful city with a great place to stay overnight just across the street. And from there, you can drive down and see other sites like Kaaba. When I first saw this, we drove over it in a Jeep. It was just a mountain. But they have since uncovered it, and now you can see the details and the beauty of their workmanship. Koba, another one, the largest pyramids in Yucatan, in the center of Yucatan, below Chichen Itza is Koba. When I first went here, I went in a Jeep, and you couldn't even see the ruins. They were covered with jungle. Now they're restored pretty well. Last time I went, in fact, they had a highway there, and we went in an air-conditioned bus. It loses some of its mystique and glamour and mystery when you do that. And they had a restroom right there and a snack bar. And the little ladies who went to see it only had to walk about half a block to get there. And one of them said, "Well, where's the escalator? You can't expect me to climb those stairs." Real adventurer, that lady was. Palenque is one of my favorites. For many years, every other year, they would have a conference here, and the archaeologists would come from all over the world. For about 6 or 8 years, they did this. And so I got to meet all these archaeologists whose books I read and sit down with them and talk to them and ask questions and find out a lot of things that I've forgotten. But each time I go back, they have reconstructed another ruin. On the right, this was always a mountain, and now you see they have taken away the stones, looked at the structure, and then put the stones back as they think they were. One of the great sites at Palenque, this Temple of the Inscriptions, was built by a king for his tomb, and it's a magnificent thing. I was coming down the steps one day, and I saw a group of people under the tree there on the right, and I thought, that has to be a Mormon group having a testimony meeting. So I went down there, and sure enough, it was, and they were talking about President Kimball giving the priesthood to the blacks. So that tells you how long ago that one was. But one lady stood up and she said, "I bear my witness that Christ stood on these very steps when he came to America." Well, it was built about 683, my dear, but I didn't tell her that. If that built her faith, that's fine. But I won't speculate. I encourage people to be a little more cautious. Not every site in ancient America is Book of Mormon. Not every native in ancient America was a descendant of the Book of Mormon. We know from science, and you can argue it, but we know that people crossed the Bering Straits. And Tom, what's your last name, Tom? Murphy. Tom Murphy tomorrow is going to talk about DNA in ancient America. They've been doing a lot of studies with DNA and trying to find out where the natives come from. And he will be talking tomorrow about that. It should be very fascinating. I want to be there. In the bottom of this temple, they found a great tomb. On the cover here, you see a man falling into the underworld. I won't go into the details, but we now know what this is all about. Van Daneken said it was a man in a chariot blasting off into outer space. But we now know this is the king falling into the underworld. He will then have an apotheosis and rise up that tree of new life, and the bird of resurrection up there promises him a life in the next world. So it's death, rebirth, and resurrection and new life. That's what it's all about. And he claimed to descend from this white-bearded god who lived in ancient times. In the tomb, they found the body. They found a mask on the right, a jade mask over his face, and on the left, a plaster cast of his face, a portrait of his face. We now know his name was King Pakal. He lived about 683 A.D. He's the one who built this pyramid. Well, you can't look at ruins all the time, so we take time out to go to the waterfalls and enjoy swimming. Wonderful, wonderful rivers and waterfalls. Very refreshing. Great place to go. Also in ancient America, they had... Let's see, is that right? I guess it is. They had statues. Maybe we're ahead of ourselves. Could you back up one on that? I don't know if you can. Push the one behind the one you've been pushing. Oh, it didn't drop. See if you can push that down. What it's going to say is sculpture, so it doesn't matter. You can invent it yourself. You see wooden sculpture, clay sculpture. Now, a big problem is the people in Book of Mormon were Israelites. Israelites were told not to make graven images. So a lot of people wonder, could these possibly be Nephites and Lamanites when they were told not to make graven images? Others have suggested they mixed with the native cultures, that picked up the tradition, as Israelites often did. They often picked up traditions from their neighbors that they weren't supposed to do. So we'll just kind of leave that up to you, whether these were carved by those people or not. That one's not supposed to be there. Back up on that one. I guess we went ahead. So now we got ahead. I don't know. Okay. I think we may even be ahead yet. Stay there in the middle. Don't do that on the next one. Here we have some interesting... they call that the dirty old man on the left. He appears quite often. We're not sure what that means. I won't even comment on that. They had a strange tradition. To prove that they were the king or the queen of the country, they had to draw their blood. They didn't have DNA then, but they still knew blood was the source. So they had to draw their blood. They had to dip it into... maybe you can back up on that center one, because I think that's the one that tells us what we're doing. They had to drop the blood into a basket. That's the wrong one. Get the other one. Oh, well. Once you get mixed up on the first three things, you're really mixed up. We have a warrior here watching over. Anyway, the blood went into the basket. They would light it. The smoke would come up. And in the smoke, they would see a serpent. And out of the serpent's mouth, they would see the king and the queen of the past. Or this ancient white bearded god. And he would proclaim, this is my relative, this is my ancestor, this is my descendant, heir to the throne. Very complicated system that they did. But the women had to draw, the queen had to draw a rope through her tongue to bleed into the basket. And that proved that her blood was blood of blood. I won't tell you what the men had to do, but there's a picture on the right, you can figure it out.
I think I would advocate in either case. Okay, now we got to,
let's see, back up again, one more. There's pottery, we're getting somewhere. I'm not sure. These were in a museum, all three at the same time. I thought about this very seriously, and I think I decided what this means.
And excuse my light-mindedness.
On the left, he's saying, you must pay the rent. He's saying, I can't pay the rent. I'll pay the rent, yes.
But the archaeologists will not agree with me on that. They're a bunch of idiots. Okay, I think we're where we're supposed to be now.
Yes.
We can focus this one. Strange little figurines, kind of gingerbread figures, and the mighty warrior and strange lady. Did this mean they were incapable of creating realism? No, I don't think so. I think they just had a style that they enjoyed, and they did it. And much like we do today, on the left, don't push that one yet. On the left, the gingerbread boy and the family. We have families today that aren't quite realistic. And we have mighty warriors today. You've already seen him. Okay, now the center one. There's our mighty warrior. And on the right, we have the pretty ladies that aren't quite right either. So much like we do today, they abstracted their art. They found a way that they liked, that worked for them. But some of their art was very realistic. And here you see... Pakal, the king Pakal, and I've seen people down there that look just like the portrait of Pakal. So the same people are still there. Pottery, they had beautiful pottery, and the Book of Mormon tells us that they had beautiful objects of art and crafts that they made. We know that they had paintings. Here you see paintings in books, paintings on pottery. So they were doing a lot of that, and writing, of course, writing in their tombs. Paintings on their walls at Bonampak. I'm going to skip a lot of this. Here we see again Oaxaca, where they had great monuments and tombs. Again, the tombs produced gold. Now, gold again is one of the things you must find if you're going to find a Book of Mormon land. And one argument is in this area, they didn't have gold until about 1000 AD, when the South Americans apparently came up and they were able to get gold from them. So much of this gold probably comes from South America. Here we see tombs at Oaxaca with beautiful gold objects. On the right, you see a breast pin, beautiful mask made out of jade. And on the left, it looks like Madonna was down there in the left part of her costume. El Tajín, another wonderful site on the Gulf Coast. And the pyramid in the center has 365 niches. All right, I'm supposed to be through so Dennis can take over, so we're going to hurry through these. A few more here. North America also had its ruins, but not as spectacular as the ruins of Central and South America. And Wayne May would have given us an example. We find carvings of bearded faces. We find stones that are carved with stories from the Bible, like the Noah and the Ark. These are found under Indian mounds, so they did have a way to tell stories. We find great cities in North America, Pueblo Bonito, the Mandan Lodges, the Cahokia, along the Mississippi. Here we see Pueblo Bonito in, where is it? Colorado. Yeah. Here's Cahokia along the river, along the Mississippi River, across from St. Louis. So we cross to St. Louis. This was as big as the pyramids of Egypt, too, but around 1200 A.D. And, of course, you've seen that one. Historic times. Well, since Book of Mormon times, civilization kept growing. We see the Olmecs, or Toltecs. I wanted to mention again, they had the story of the white-bearded god who came to America in ancient times. We see bearded statues, figures that represent this white-bearded god. You've been to Chichen Itza. Here's what it used to look like. You have been there, see now that it looks like this. I've got to hurry through this or we won't be where we're supposed to start for the next session. Chichen Itza, some of you have been there. Inside, other temples. Bearded figures we find all over the Americas. The white bearded god story. I have another presentation like this just on the bearded white god and evidence for Christ having come to America, so I'm not going to dwell on that. But they did believe in that, and my book, which I'm not trying to sell, it's right down the hall on some tables, tells this story. Okay, Aztec territory. The Spaniards found these ruins, and now we see the three plazas, Aztec, Spaniard, and then modern civilization in Mexico City. I'm just going to rush through all this. Natives today, the Indians are still there doing their thing, wearing their typical costumes. Beautiful people. This is all from Guatemala. A wonderful place to be on a mission. And you see the anachronism of it. Here's a guy named Dodge sitting on a De Soto. Indians today playing basketball. Tulum, one of my favorite centers, found by Cortez. You can see the change today that's going on. One of the places where you can see the map from the air. The Guatemalans have not cut the jungle. Mexico has. And so you can see the map from the air. Very dramatic. And look at that beautiful island on the left. And then a few years later, we see Panama City. Well, a great place to go. Great motels on the left. Sleeping places. Places to snorkel and fish. And finally, we end up with the goods when we get home. Okay. We'll end here for now and let Dennis do her bit. Let's see. We need light for you, don't we, Dennis? Pull this over here. Where do you want this? Dennis, I asked her to speak to us because she has an unusual approach about the Mormon occurring in South America. And she has a wonderful book about that. I'm going to let her tell you her story about that. Let's see. What is so you'll know? No, I'm going to be a 20 so you'll know that 5 minutes. It'll turn something.
going to be in the way of what you can see? What a wonderful show we have just had. And what a lot of knowledge that man has. Okay, can you hear me? All right? Okay. Mine is quite a bit different than Terry's was. And I'm going to be talking about South America. I had a code I followed while searching for Book of Mormon lands. I adopted it from a saying by Emmanuel Velikovsky, author of the book Earth in Upheaval. There are three parts to this code. One, untruth in science may live for centuries, and you may not see yourself vindicated, but dare. Number two, don't persist in your idea if the facts are against it. Do persist if the facts you're gathering are on your side. Three, all fruitful ideas have been conceived in the minds of some characters for whom the known is still unknown, and who often went back again where others passed by. I followed the code. I went back again at a place researchers seemingly evaded. I have about 20 minutes, time to present only a small portion of my book, The Book and the Map. Some of the information will be found in my new book, Secrets of Book of Mormon Geography. Much of the research I have done was in the libraries of Stanford and at the University of California, Berkeley. The title of my paper today is Finding the Nephite Island. This title may seem strange, but it has something to do with going back where others passed by. My search for Book of Mormon lands began in the 1970s, shortly after my students questioned the map provided by the seminary on Book of Mormon locations. I said, "There is no problem so simple that it doesn't confuse me too. What is your question?" They said, "Where the heck is it?" This pushed me into a vigorous search for every city, river, sea, and land mentioned in the Book of Mormon. Ordinarily, I don't believe in coincidence, but on one particular evening, I ran across a geographical scripture that came to the point. It was one of those scriptures others had passed by. In 2 Nephi 10:20, Jacob, the brother of Nephi, said, "For we are not cast off. Nevertheless, we have been driven out of the land of our inheritance. But we have been led to a better land, for the Lord has made the sea our path, and we are upon an isle of the sea." I got myself a drink of water and gave the matter some serious thought. I concluded the promised land must have been an island. Without question, it was a great find. But after settling on the idea, a statement in Alma Burton's first edition of Discourses of the Prophet Joseph Smith almost caused me to discard any thought of an Isle of the Sea. The statement was titled Lehi's Travels, A Revelation to Joseph the Seer. It began, "The course Lehi and his company traveled from Jerusalem to the place of their destination. They traveled nearly south, southeast direction until they came to the 19th degree of north latitude, then nearly east to the Sea of Arabia, then sailed in a southeast direction and landed on the continent of South America in Chile, 30 degrees south latitude. 30 degrees south latitude would place them near Coquimbo, Chile. If any of you have read the Book of Mormon in search of geographical information, you know the Promised Land was made up of a land northward, a land southward, and a narrow neck of land between. If Lehi's landing was on the continent of South America, how is it possible this large continent could be called an island? And if it were called an island, could it be squeezed in its extremely large middle to form a narrow neck of land? So, is South America an island or a continent? Can both statements be correct? One thing certain, the Nephite Island, for there truly was an island, seems to have vanished, leaving a big problem involving a big question. The big problem, Joseph Smith said, Lehi landed on a continent, not an island. Furthermore, he had said the Promised Land is Zion, meaning North and South America. His exact words were, "It is the land that the Lord gave to Jacob, who bequeathed it to his son Joseph and his posterity, and they inhabit it. And that is the land of North and South America." The big question, North and South America are both continents, too large to be called islands by any stretch of my imagination. So where is the Nephite Island? And why did Jacob, the brother of Nephi, say with absolute certainty, "We are upon an isle of the sea"? I mulled this over and stayed awake nights thinking about it. Clearly, there were conflicts between the Book of Mormon and statements made by Joseph Smith. Then the words of the prophet Ether left me wondering when he wrote, "After the waters had receded from off the face of this land, it," meaning one land, "became a choice land, and it was the place of the New Jerusalem." At this point, Ether had introduced North American continent for the designated location of the New Jerusalem is Jackson County, Missouri, USA. Ether's words indicated to me that North and South America, BC, were one land. It would have been easy to say someone made a mistake, and I'll take it on faith and quit. Somehow it didn't seem right according to my code. I decided to turn to new sources. I began to review books written by explorers, and in so doing, discovered what could be the first great secret to the mystery of the Nephite Island. You see, land connecting North and South America had not always been visible to the naked eye, it being submerged, dropped down below sea level. A. Hyatt Verrill, in his book Old Civilizations of the New World, describes the 150-mile stretch between Colombia and central Panama as a mystery which no one can solve. For said he, that land appears absolutely barren of all signs of occupation by civilized or even highly cultured tribes. Absence of these signs would seem to confirm the conclusion of Carlton Beals that Panama, at least part of it, previously was submerged and the South American continent isolated. If Carlton Beals is correct, then North and South America have always been connected, albeit by submerged lands. And we can safely say North and South America are Zion, as Joseph Smith declared. Because the connecting submerged links between the two continents isolated South America, we can also safely say a part of South America may have formed the Nephite Island. This submerged land would allow the sea north, the Caribbean Sea, this submerged land would have allowed the sea north, Caribbean Sea, to join the sea west, the Pacific Ocean, without interruption. I thought this significant. Still no trace of the Nephite Island could be found. And if a part of South America was an island, how did this island become today's South American continent? For an answer to that question, see 3rd Nephi, chapter 8, where verse 6 states, "There was a great and terrible tempest, and a terrible thunder, insomuch that it shake the whole earth, as if it were about to divide us under." Verse 13, "And the highways were broken up, and the level roads were spoiled, and many smooth places became rough." Verse 14, "And many great and terrible cities were sunk, and many were burned." Verse 17, "And thus the face of the whole earth became deformed." For me, all this points to a great upheaval of submerged lands which rose up out of the sea during Christ's crucifixion, a process lasting 3 hours. That is 3 Nephi 8:19. Most scholars in the field do not agree on a South American island, but surprises are in store for those of you who will look closely at a map of South America. Look with the thought of an island in your mind's eye. Notice the relatively small area occupied by the Andes mountain range. Might that range have been our Nephite Island? Suppose the Amazon Basin was once a great freshwater sea. And what is today's Argentina was completely inundated. Notice how our Isle of the Sea emerges, along with our otherwise unsuspected Sea East. The Amazon Sea East and an inundated land of Argentina is not a supposition. There is ample evidence this configuration existed. For instance, the 1971 Encyclopedia Britannica reports that at one time, the Amazon Valley was a great freshwater sea. Dr. James J. Parsons, a professor of geography at the University of California at Berkeley, confirms fossils indicate a sea occupied the basin. More than 200 rivers feed into the basin from surrounding mountains. 10 of these rivers are larger than the Rhine. A graphic from Lauren McIntyre's article, The Amazon, shows how veins of the River Sea lace a basin three-fourths the size of the United States. Its drainage system covers a total area of 2,722,000 square miles. McIntyre said, at maximum flood, the Amazon pours 8 trillion gallons into the ocean every day, enough to furnish 200 times the municipal water requirements for the United States. Seeking a name to describe the oceanic size of the Amazon's vast waterways, Portuguese explorers called it O Rio Mar, the River Sea. Apparently, in the days of the Nephites and the Jaredites, these rivers kept the Amazon sea east full. Today, it keeps the mighty Amazon flowing. To satisfy the requirement of the Isle of the Sea, the Andean coast must have extended much further south, even than the vast Amazon basin. For this evidence, we go to an otherwise unlikely ally, Charles Darwin, who gives unmistakable evidence found by him on his voyage of the Beagle to South America, confirming that Argentina was completely inundated at one time. As also were Uruguay, Paraguay, and the southern half of Chile. Darwin made his first discovery significant to our purpose along the Atlantic coast of Patagonia and lower Argentina. Here he found white beds of seashells, including giant oyster shells, some of which measured 12 inches in diameter. Over these were scattered small stones resembling pumice. These beds averaged 200 miles in breadth and about 50 feet in thickness. This indicated to Darwin that everything on this southern continent has been affected in a grand scale. The land from Rio Plata to Tierra del Fuego a distance of 1,200 miles has been raised in mass. Within the period of the now existing seashells, that is to say, this entire land mass was once underwater. After making this startling observation, Darwin moved over to the Chilean coast. Here he made a trip to the foot of the Andes for the purpose of seeing great beds of shells which stand above the level of the sea and are burnt for lime. He found these shells near Valparaiso, not many miles from today's Santiago, some of them on beaches 1,300 feet higher than the present beach. Some were embedded in a reddish-black vegetable mold, which was found to be marine mud. Darwin summed up by saying, the proofs of the elevation of this whole line of coast are unequivocal. Following his observation on the coast, he traveled from Santiago, Chile, over the Andes by way of the Portillo Pass to Mendoza, Argentina. He recorded that a few miles north of Mendoza, at an elevation of about 7,000 feet, I observed on a bare slope some snow-white projecting columns. These were petrified trees. He wrote, it required little geological practice to interpret the marvelous story which this scene at once unfolded. Though I confess I was at first so much astonished that I could scarcely believe the plainest evidence. I saw the spot where a cluster of fine trees once waved their branches on the shores of the Atlantic, when that ocean, now driven back 700 miles, came to the foot of the Andes. We're talking about
this spot right here.
Earl Parker Hansen, Chairman, Department of Geography and Geology of the University of Delaware, believes the Gran Chaco Boreal, a plain covering the western section of Paraguay and the northwestern section of Argentina, was at one time the bed of an ancient sea. There are other evidences, but for now consider this. Looming high on the west was our Nephite Island, which probably stretched from today's Colombia to Talca, Chile. East of the Amazon Sea East was another island, not so high as the West, or Nephite Island, which must have extended from the Orinoco River to today's Uruguay. Forming an unbroken rim on the east side of the East Sea. It would appear that the catastrophic upheaval at the time of Christ's crucifixion tilted the land downward toward the east, where water pressure broke through a section of the East Island rim at Obidos, leaving a 1.5 mile opening with mountain stumps on either side. Immediately, the water began to drain from the Amazon Sea East through the Obidos Narrows and on to the Atlantic. Dr. Greswell and Anthony Huxley, in their article Amazon from the Standard Encyclopedia of World's Rivers and Lakes, suggest that with the rise of the Andes in the west, or Chilean uplift, there has, in fact, been some downward tilting of the continent toward the east. In summary, the 3-hour upheaval apparently involved volcanic eruptions along the so-called fire lane, stretching the entire length of the Andes Mountains, causing strong winds, whirlwinds, lightning, hail, rain, earthquakes, avalanches, and falling ash, which caused darkness upon the land. So you see, we found our Nephite Island, after all, as it existed before the time of Christ. After the catastrophic changes, the sea east drained, and the Isle of the Sea vanished as such. Remaining was a river, the Amazon, and a large continent, South America.
But hers is in there, too. Okay, we're just going to go through real fast now. We looked at the possibilities. We need you back there again, Brad, on that center one. Thanks. South America, Central America on the left, North America. If Wayne were here, he would take 25 minutes talking about North America. But what I'd like to show you now very quickly, this would be Wayne's presentation in brief. North America, he believes it happened up there around Lake Ontario, up by Palmyra. The River Sidon is right where the Niagara Falls are. And of course, we do know Camorra was where Camorra is. That we do know for sure. In North America, we find plenty of buried bodies, great heaped up bodies, we find mounds, we find culture, we find gold, we find even writing. We find great embankments. The Book of Mormon says they had cities with big embankments around them and then great beams in those embankments to protect them. So we find that in North America, and Wayne has a lot about that. One of the great finds, 10 years ago, this friend of mine, Russell Burroughs, found a cave. Here is a drawing of the rivers where it was carved on a stone in the cave, and it matches the Mississippi perfectly. In the cave, he says he found a sarcophagus with shields and lances and rolled-up scrolls. Wayne May is not here today because he's back there working on that cave, trying to get into it again to see if we can find out what's really there and where it comes from. And in that cave, I brought, but I forgot to bring them in here, they're out at my table if you want to see them. 7,000 stones have come out of that cave with faces that are definitely not Indian. We don't know what they are or where they come from. I won't have time to tell you about them now. But also 6,000 Michigan plates found under native mounds in North America depict the great God of heaven, sun on the left hand, sun on the right hand, figure on a cross with Roman generals in the background. Over here, that great dragon, sun on the left hand, and a warrior for the righteousness, sun on the right hand. All of this has been found. In fact, these stones, here you see in the center, a great boat, 40 days, 40 nights. On the left, you see the sun and the moon. And on the left, the church now has 6,000 of these in its warehouse in Salt Lake City, where we happen to be, right? And so we don't know what they are, but they're there. In case we find out someday, we have 6,000 of them to look at. Other things in North America, a stone found in a native grave on the left with the Ten Commandments engraved. Another stone found in a native grave in the center with the inscription, the Golden Age of the Jews. And here in near Albuquerque, New Mexico, a large stone that I was able to see a couple of years ago with the Ten Commandments. No one knows where that came from or how long it's been. We find natives in North America who are very fair-skinned. The Mandan were almost white. They say there would never be a king. The Book of Mormon says this land would never have a king. There was only one. Does anyone know who it was? Strang. He departed from the Mormon church and formed himself a kingdom in this little island, but he was shot by his followers, so it didn't last very long. So here we have from her book, this is from the cover of Venice's book, the idea of the island, Central America, many theories, North America, many other theories. Now, real quickly, all of these three places, North America, Central America, South America, have great cities, so they all qualify that way. Again, on the left, they all have pyramids and great mountains. Left on North America, Central America, South America here. I had a better one, but I didn't get it in yet. They all had burials and great artifacts and mounds built up around their cities. So North America on the left, Central America had great mounds with the wooden posts sticking out to protect them, as the Book of Mormon says. And in South America, we also find these great protective mounds. They all had roads. Again, North America on the left, above Chaco Canyon. Central America. In South America, there are better roads than this, but this is the one I had a slide of. So they all had roads, as the Book of Mormon says. They had wheels, too. We'll see that in a minute. They had boats, of course, North, Central, and South America. In the center, we even see white people in the boats. Interesting figures. They all had gold, eventually. On the left, North America has produced this gold, the Burroughs Cave. Central America had a lot after about 1000 A.D., they may have had more before. We don't know. We just haven't found it again. On the right, South America definitely had gold. Writing, North America again on the left, Central America. On the right, we haven't found much writing in South America. They didn't have it when the Spaniards came. Again, maybe it was buried. Maybe it was taken out. All the answers aren't in. Boxes, where they kept their treasures. No comment again. Bearded figures. North America, Central and South, again, all have bearded figures. So, you see, we have all these things that weren't known during Joseph Smith's time, and now they're being found. So, They don't prove the Book of Mormon. I want to make that point. They corroborate it. They sustain it. But these things don't prove anything. All this proves is they found a bearded figure down in South America. That's all it proves. The rest is conjecture. And we have to be a little bit careful about that. Elephants. This is a tough one for archaeologists. They say no elephants were here during the time of human beings. But in South America, North America on the left, we see this stone that was found in a native tomb. Central America, again, an elephant-looking figure. And on the right, an elephant figure from South America. Baptismal fonts, the Book of Mormon talks about the Indians of North America baptized in the rivers. But in Central America and South America, we find what could be bathing areas or baptismal fonts, however you want to interpret it. It's pure interpretation, though. Volcanoes, great volcanoes covering up cities, we find that all over the Americas. Horses, yes, we find evidence for horses on the walls. That happens to be South America. We find the plaster and the cement. Here they piled up their wood to burn the lye and the stone to break it down to make their plaster and their cement. We find a wheel all over the Americas, especially Central America. The use of a wheel is very common and mentioned in the Book of Mormon. We find these great burials with treasures, beautiful materials. We find areas that are indicative of great wars and destructions. We find, again, bearded faces. In the center, we find blonde figures who are circumcised. We find the Star of David. These are found in various places. I won't have time to tell you where they are. On the left, one of those Michigan plates in the church office or church warehouse showing a crucified being. The native manuscripts in Central America show crucified beings as well. So the story of the white-bearded God is very rampant. My book has hundreds of stories of these white-bearded gods all over the Americas and the quest who they might be. The great message of the Book of Mormon, of course, and the great purpose is that Christ came to America, that he blessed the people here, and there's plenty of evidence for that. It's not so important where the Book of Mormon occurred as that it occurred, and a witness to the Book of Mormon does not come through archaeology. None of this proves to me the Book of Mormon occurred. It just corroborates it. It's fascinating. I think this brings people to an interest where they can search for a witness of the Book of Mormon, where they will want to read it. And I think seeing all of this helps us maybe picture these people and make them real instead of just somebody we read about. And we can kind of picture the cities that they might have lived in and the kind of people they were and the crafts that they developed.